الله أكبر الله.
What was like that, Haji?
Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and welcome to The Shooting Bench, the most radical, right-wing, conservative, no-holds-barred, information-packed, freedom-loving firearms information program on talk radio, beginning right now.
Die, fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Okay, if everything's working right, I should be here. I had another thing I wanted to play for you for my intro, but I'll have to, didn't have enough time, so I'll have to save that for tomorrow, or Monday. So, all right, let me get my thoughts together here now. All that's been on the news right now, wait a minute, let me see. Okay, Mountain Shooter heard Mel Gibson, so I guess, let's see, is it working? Hello, hello. Let me check and see. Let me look over here at my little doohickey and see if it's bouncing. It's bouncing, and it's all different colors. So that should be a sign. All right. Check one more time here. Okay, thank you, NM Glock. All that's been on the news all day has been stuff about the Mueller report, whatever. And I'm anxious to see if anything happens. I'm not optimistic. Nothing ever has. You know that we've talked about this a dozen times, or probably 50 times actually. And they say they've got some pretty hard evidence against a number of officials. And they said indictments are forthcoming. It's which indictments that I'm concerned about. If they're just going to indict the janitor and you know the guy that walks the dog or whatever, then it's not such a big deal. But I don't know. We'll see. It sounds good, the things that they're talking about. I listened to it quite a bit this afternoon, and we'll see. Okay, let's move on. Hey, we've got a few interesting things here. And then we're going to talk a little bit about triggers here a little later. I never thought about this, and probably we should. You know, Tebow may have thought about this, but Tebow's sharp as a tack when it comes to all this constitutional stuff. But there was a this has been going on for quite a while. Why can I not get this deal off here? Oh, boy, I get frustrated sometimes with this. But they say that chalking your tires, you know, when the meter maid, meter molly, we used to call them, when a cop comes along and chalks your tires to mark how long you've been in a parking spot and then issues you a ticket, you know, accordingly later on. There's a Michigan court here that says that this is a violation of your Fourth Amendment rights, because the cop is actually trespassing. Who asked him to put a mark on your tire? And the judge has, I mean, the judge, the three-judge panel, the court has upheld this. It actually started a couple of years ago, and just recently, there was a guy issued 15 tickets. Same guy, Allison Taylor, was issued 15 tickets in 3 years in Saginaw, Michigan, by the same parking enforcement officer. And this guy is described in the suit as the most prolific issuer of parking tickets. So anyway, they write that even if chalking the tire is a search, it's a reasonable one. Now, this was the original judgment in ruling in 2017, because a piece of chalk isn't an information-gathering device that could violate Taylor's privacy, like a GPS tracker or something. But the appeals panel Monday agreed that chalking a tire is a search, but the judges disagreed that it was a reasonable search. So that has been overruled, vetoed, shot down. They wrote that when drivers pull into parking spaces, the city commences its search on vehicles that are parked legally, without probable cause or even so much as individualized suspicion of wrongdoing. Moreover, overstaying your welcome of a parking space doesn't cause injury or ongoing harm to the community, meaning that the city's wrong to argue that the parking enforcement is part of its community caretaking responsibility. Everybody hold on 1 second. I'll be right straight back. Hold on just a minute. All right, back. Sorry about the dead air there, but we had some baby chicks hatch today, and I was informing Amy of my duties as a chick caretaker for a little while. Okay, let's see. Where are we at? Let me get back over here where I was at here. So, well, I'm going to leave that where it's at, but it's something for you to think about. I think that there may be quite a – I don't know how many jurisdictions would uphold this. I don't know how many jurisdictions actually even do this anymore, but that and similar intrusions – invasions of your privacy may be under the same constitutional scrutiny there. So, all right, let's move right along. This is I guess I shouldn't say it's funny. I guess I can. It's neither one of the cops died. So, but these guys apparently, while confronting a suspect, shot each other. It's called crossfire. Thou shalt not get in the crossfire. They shot the bad guy, or shot at him, and the two California cops shot each other. So all of them, I think, got the ride to the hospital. How cozy is that? That's pretty awesome. I'm back over here and check and see who we've got. I'm waiting a couple of people here. Okay. All right. Yeah, that's right, T-Ball. It wasn't SCOTUS. It wasn't the Supreme Court. So there's no telling what you might get. But my point is, if hey, Frog's with us tonight. Hello, Frog. The point is that I never, for a minute, even considered this being unconstitutional. So my point is that we probably should be more alert and think about these things a little bit. And the more they get sued, the more they get challenged, and the more they get overruled, the more the sooner some of these intrusions will stop. That was what I was kind of getting at. There is not the... It's not the chalk thing that's that important. It's just that it's a simple little thing that most people don't think about. So. Okay. Yeah, I tell you what, it probably wouldn't make any difference on my pickup. But if I had a $250,000 Jaguar out there or something, and some cop come along and mark my tire, I'd probably be pissed, unconstitutional or not. But anyway. All right, now here's another, but this one's not as humorous as this one. This is another jackbooted thug story. This was a couple in Washington. No, in Connecticut. The girl's name was Washington. Yeah. They were minding their own business, unarmed, parked in a car that met the description of a car that was just involved in an armed robbery. So these cops come up there and went to blazing away at this car, injured the girl inside. There was a couple inside, a girl and her boyfriend. Apparently the boyfriend didn't get hit. I don't know how many times they shot, but they hit the girl. And they took her to the hospital, but the point of this thing was they didn't. And what the protests are about, the whole story is about protest erupting here after the cops opened fire on this unarmed couple, because they were an unarmed couple. They hadn't done anything. They're just sitting there. And apparently, let me get a little farther down here in the story. I read it, but I don't remember. And see, authorities claimed the officers fired because the driver of the car made an abrupt movement and ignored commands from the officers. Now, the problem with this is all the officers have to say is this is what happened. And unless they've got somebody's got a dash cam or something, they won't dispute it. If that's what the cop said, then that's the way it's going to be. This incident, what did it say? Let's see. The mayor says this incident betrays police activity gone horribly wrong. And now Stephanie, the girl that got shot, as well as many residents, her family, or friends, must live with the consequences and resulting uncertainty of what was by every definition an unacceptable response. The officers involved have been identified. Okay, we don't care what their names are. Department of Energy Services and Public Protection Commissioner says he's asking for a little patience, but plan to release body cam video and other information. So we'll see what happens. So far, they have there's a lot of protests and people are saying that this was wrong, but nothing's being done about it. But they're investigating it, so we may have a follow up story here before long. If we do, I will jump right on it. Okay, moving right along. Here's a gun-related thing. Let me do the gun-related thing after this, because I've got two gun-related things we're going to spend some time on here. One is a topic that Doc called me on here the other day. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And the other one is about a police department changing guns, and it's an interesting story why they're doing this. So. But this one here, wait a minute, would I see Brittany's? Click no thanks, all right. This one here, this was just recently, just in the last few days. Let's see. When was it? No, it was a week or so ago. Is when I don't know what brought this on, but some Mexican troops on our side of the border pulled guns on our National Guard troops and disarmed them, questioned them on our side of the border. This side of the Rio Grande River, north of the Rio Grande River in the United States of America is what happened, where they were at. Now, I don't know what the hell they were doing there to start with, and I don't know what they were doing pulling guns on our troops, and I don't know what our troops were doing surrendering their guns. Obviously, I wasn't there. I don't know what the circumstances were. But in that being the case, I can't really say a whole lot. But it irks me that just from the preliminary report here, these guys just gave up their gun. Remember the SEAL team? Was it SEALs? They gave up their guns on the ship that time that Iran got a hold of, or was it just Navy guys? I think it was just Navy. I don't remember. But anyway, I was not impressed with the whole thing, as you might notice. Having a hard time. I think I swallowed a bone here or something. All right, let's get back over here where we're at. President Trump's not liking it very much. He said that will not be happening again. And so I'm anxious to see what the rest of the story is on this after he I'm assuming there's going to be more conversation, more discussion about this. But as for right now, he's unhappy about it and said it better not happen again, and that was the end of that. But apparently these guys were temporarily disarmed and detained and questioned by five or six armed Mexicans. Says they sped up on the two soldiers before they could call for emergency assistance. So, I don't know. It's hard to say anything without a video or without being there. I don't know how in that country like that, how someone could, I can see how someone could speed up on them before you could ask for assistance. But how do they speed up on them before you could take a defensive posture and create a, what? Tell me what it is. Tell me. Mexican standoff. Yeah. It's not my place to say, I guess. It just seems like that's what should have happened. But it is not what happened. So I don't know. All right, let's go back over here to this gun-related deal here. Let me pop this deal up here and put that there and put that over there. And then I'll put this up here. Okay, that'll work just like that. All right. Here in Arizona, about 3 or 4 years ago, it's a neat video. It's interesting how they did it. Remember we talked about that girl that had the Smith & Wesson that someone had worked on? And we've always said, everybody has always said that guns just don't go off. Well, I've always said unless they were mechanically messed with or something. You know, I had a Remington 760, I think, 30-06, went off when I popped a magazine in it because somebody had been messing with the trigger. So that should say if the gun is mechanically sound, it will not just go off on its own. You have to pull the trigger, do something, you know, engage the trigger somehow. So, but that's not the case with these FNs. The Arizona Department of Public Safety got rid of their SIGs, which can't blame them there. They had Glocks originally, and they got their SIGs, and as they were getting, matter of fact, we have a friend of mine here that was with the Department of Public Safety when this happened, and he told him, he said, this is not going to work, this is a dumb move. And, of course, they did it anyway. But these FNs are, the first story in this story, there's a story in a story here, there's two or three stories in this story. There was an officer that got home from a day at the shooting range. This was 4 years ago. Had a bunch of guns and range bags slung over his shoulder and his new duty pistol and his holster on his belt. 20-year veteran of the Department of Public Safety, firearms trainer and weapons expert, they call him. He was probably the first, they think, to experience this. He lifted the bag off his shoulder, the range bag, and heard a boom and smelled gunpowder. The first thought was one of the guns in his bag had gone off. It's a logical assumption. Then he looked down, and the FN pistol in its holster, sitting in the holster, had gone off, shooting him in the right leg. This is an FNS-9. And was one of the first FN pistols purchased by DPS for use by the officers. And this cop was part of the firearms training unit, just the division within the DPS that trains troopers and also responsible for testing and evaluating new weapons for the force. So investigation in this determined that a key or something on the exterior of his bag had gotten wedged in the trigger. Okay, that's one thing. And if you look at his, there's a very close-up good picture of his holster. This is not the gun's fault. This was because not enough of his trigger guards covered. It actually looks like it's been cut out, but I don't know that. You can't get your finger in there, but there's plenty of room to get a foreign object in there, like a key. And that's what happened here. But that's not the whole story. It says for more than 3 years that they would continue to discover issues with these pistols that are now the standard sidearm for every DPS agent or trooper out there. And this caused them to do one of two things. Fire unexpectedly or not fire at all. So in this video, they've over and over and over with different guns, they got 100% predictable results, and they take a little plastic mallet, pointed downrange safely, and they tap the top of the gun. They didn't hit it very hard; they just tap it just a little, and the gun would fire every time. And then sometimes after that happened, it would not fire again. So, as you might expect, this created a little bit of a problem. Well, they're solving the problem by, of course, going back to Glock. So they should have never forsaken the Glock to start with, but anyway. Now, a lot of guns will go off if they're cocked and off safety and around is chambered. And they're hit hard enough, and we've talked about this before, you drop them on the floor, hit the butt on the floor, you know, of a long gun. A number of things will cause it to go off if it's done hard enough. But generally, tapping the slide on a handgun doesn't make them go off. And he was just very gently, easy tap. It wasn't a smack of any kind. It wasn't like the SIGs that they, who was it, what department was it, when they discovered that if they dropped them, that they were very reliably, that they would go off. Well, you know, you kind of expect that because that's what a lot of guns do. That's why they've created drop safeties in so many different guns. Matter of fact, I think the 1911 was probably one of the first guns out that actually employed a drop safety back in, when was it, 70-something? And Glock, of course, has two drop safeties in it. But anyway, this story has been ongoing for some time, you know, for 4 years. But at the end of the day, what they're doing is going back to, let's see, during testing of weapons in 2018, DPS found that three of the FN pistols, the FNS Long Slide, which is carried by troopers, and the FNSC and FNS 9, all had two conditions that could cause them to either fire without pulling the trigger or not fire when the trigger was pulled. So in this, and here in the cap rack, any side-to-side or up-down movement, they jammed the magazine in the gun, and it would fire every time. Tap it with the mallet, and it fired every time. So I'm sure FN is, for one thing, they got egg on their face over it, and the second thing is this cost them some money. There's still some FNs in use, meaning, about 500 of them. They're getting rid of them, and they are going back to Glocks, apparently. So I can't blame them for that. All right. Well, after the break, we're going to talk about triggers, Doc, since you started this. We'll be back in just a minute.
I'll be back.
Getting back to school, I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. This is true. I work in the summer, I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, and he says, He says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people, for which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life, without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation. And justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance. Under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Okay, we're back. You know, I hate to bring this up. I hate to admit it, but there may be some young whippersnappers out there that don't know who that was that we just played there. That was. Most of you know, I'm sure, but there may be some that don't. That was Red Skelton. Red Skelton was quite possibly the funniest man that ever lived. Never used even the remotest hint of a cuss word of any description. And that guy could just keep you rolling in the aisles. He was so funny. Huh? Yeah, that's Amy's favorite also. And that he was a fiercely patriotic, as a lot of our older movie stars were. You know, you don't see that quite as much now, as you, not nearly as much actually as you used to. But if you look back at John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart and I can't think of any of them now, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra. There's a lot of those guys were very, very patriotic. A good many of them served in the military. Quite a few of them did. You know, everybody knows or should know the story of Audie Murphy and some of these guys. So maybe we'll go into that at another time. But anyway, the point of this was that he wrote that and recorded that back in, I think, in the 70s. So it wasn't like it happened in 1999 or something, where after the Pledge of Allegiance had been eliminated from a great many schools. At that time, when he wrote this, it was still commonplace for all the schools to do that. And then they haven't. People get on Facebook and they holler and squall and moan and groan about being taken out of schools. It has some, quite a few of them. But it hasn't been taken out of schools generally. There are still a lot of schools, as far as I know, which I haven't been to one of them for a while, but in New Mexico, they still say the pledge. When my kids were going to school in New Mexico, they still got up and said the pledge every morning. And I come up to my kids' school when they were very young, probably second grade, maybe. And I went up to their school and they were playing God Bless America over the PA system. So it's not completely gone. Doc, that's a that's probably a good point. I don't think Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne would be especially patriotic to the 2019 version of the United States of America. But yeah, it's getting harder. Okay, let's. Doc called me the other day and asked me a question. I had thought about it, but probably not in the context that he had asked me about. And that is, do you think that someone resets the trigger under extreme stress? And for reset, for those of you that don't know, it's when you the majority of people, until they've been told, resetting the trigger is the best kept secret in the firearms industry. Until you've been taught this, you don't do it on your own. What you do is you pull the trigger and it kind of bounces off like it shocked you, and then you start all over again and reacquire your position of the finger on the trigger and take the slack out and press it again, and it bounces off, and you go through this all the time. Well, that affects your accuracy and it affects your speed. Some time back, and I don't know who was the first one to come up with the idea, they found out that if you reset that trigger purposely after you fire, that it cuts way down on movement of the barrel. Now, when you ask somebody what is trigger control, you get two answers. One of them, and these are about 50-50, one of them is keeping your finger off the trigger, and they'll say keep it pointed in a safe direction. Keep it pointed in a safe direction is not trigger control. That's muzzle control. But and the other one is don't allow the motion, the movement of pulling a trigger to disturb your sight picture. Both of those are right to some degree, but it's much, much deeper than that. Trigger control is, as the first answer, when you're through firing, your finger should immediately spring out of that trigger guard and have it straight alongside the frame. And that is when you are certain that you are safe and finished firing. I've seen people try to be extra careful and come out of the trigger guard every single shot. that is a waste of time. It's not, I don't know that it's any safer than in any other way to do it. And there's no way to remain accurate when you're anticipating bouncing your trigger out of there when you pull the trigger. So do you reset the trigger under stress? Well, Doc and I have similar thoughts, but they vary a little bit. Doc says that he doesn't believe they will under the stress of a gunfight, of an actual gunfight when your people are shooting at you. I think that if you practice enough, now I think Doc is 100% correct for 95% of the shooters out there. 90%. Because not enough people to practice that trigger reset. And they don't practice it enough. Even if you can't be shown trigger reset and practice it one weekend and expect to reset that trigger properly under stress. But I do believe that if you practice enough and it becomes a robotic mechanical movement, you've committed this to muscle memory. I know a lot of people don't like that word muscle memory, but you call it whatever you want. I call it muscle memory. If you don't like it, sue me. Write your congressman. I don't care. I think that if you shoot enough and you practice that properly and often enough, I believe that you will. I haven't, that might be a good thing to do. Maybe I'll research a bunch of videos of people in gunfights and see if, of course, it would take hundreds and hundreds of them to get a reasonable representation because, like I said, a lot of people don't even know about trigger reset. So, you know, naturally the first 65 million videos that I look at are probably not going to show anything. But I think that the average person certainly will not reset that trigger. But once it's committed to muscle memory, I think that you, and because it's committed, because we practice that much and because we have committed this to muscle memory, or it has been committed. We didn't commit it to muscle memory. It just kind of got there. I think that that you would. The only thing that I have to go on with that, which is not the same thing, I understand that. But let me finish my thought here. The only thing I have to go on with that is the first TV commercial that I did back in 02, oh, too long ago. No, it was actually 2005, I think, when I did that, or 6. And I thought, you know, I wanted part of that video, and I've still got that video. Part of that was just a very rapid fire deal, shooting at steel targets just to get the effect in the TV commercial. And I thought, well, I wonder if I really do reset that trigger when I'm shooting that fast, because I certainly don't think I don't have time to think about it, don't have time to consciously do it. So I got the raw footage from the people that recorded the video, made the commercial. And I slowed it down frame by frame, and sure enough, even though I was shooting pretty much as fast as I was capable of, I was resetting the trigger properly. And I don't know that it would be any different under stress. I couldn't say. Doc suggested training that way in jerking the trigger. That's the part where I lost him. I don't understand. I don't know why we would practice that. If you shoot faster and more accurately by resetting the trigger, why would you interrupt your training? Because I think then you would destroy everything that you'd been working on by practicing by purposely practicing slapping the trigger. He's talking about, what did he say, jerking the trigger well. Okay, Doc says it's not quite what he said. He said that, and even trained personnel, people are going to jerk the trigger behind stress. I don't know. Well, they may jerk the trigger hard, but it, I kind of lost him on this. I don't know. If you're, some guns stop, you know, the trigger stops immediately as they fire, and some of them go beyond that a little bit. Some of my Glocks have trigger stops on them, and some of them don't. The ones that I shoot long range and, you know, accuracy stuff with all have trigger stops. So whether I jerk it or not, it's still only going to go to a certain point and stop. I hate a sloppy trigger where there's movement after the gun goes off. That just absolutely destroys any reasonable degree of accuracy there. So I'm kind of lost, I guess, Doc, and if you're suggesting training and jerking the trigger well, I don't know. I just noticed Nan's comment up there about Red Skelton. Yeah, that's right. He did say 48 states, and that was, so that would have been 19. It was a 59, 56 when, yeah, it would have been 59, somewhere in there. Anyway, so Doc, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if you can clear that up in text. I wish I had the means for you to call in. We could talk about this a little more, but, I guess I'm with you to a point, but I don't understand why I would want to practice jerking the trigger. If I certainly might, whether I practice it or not, I sure might, and probably would actually under that kind of stress. But I'm just at a loss as to why I would practice that. If I'm probably going to do it anyway, why practice? But Doc may be typing a response for us right now. We'll find out here in a minute. Anyway, depending on what Doc puts up there. Now, I don't know. I can't wrap my mind around the idea that we would purposely practice this. I can wrap my mind around the idea that it certainly will probably happen for most of us. But to destroy or interrupt years of training and practice of proper reset and the speed of shooting by resetting properly, I'm lost, I guess. Okay, well, we may come back to this if Doc is typing a response and is going to come back and say something. Well, we may revisit this before I close. It's almost closing time already. So, I had another, after the big walk last weekend, it looked like a blood blister. I don't know if any of you know what this is. I did manage to get a blister on the bottom of my foot, and no infection, no nothing. It healed and got over it. It was not a big deal. But then I started feeling something that felt like either, you know, like a little bone spur or a plantar's wart or something like that inside my, under the skin. And, it started hurting, and it came on pretty fast. And I couldn't figure out what it was. And I pulled my foot up and cocked it up there on my knee where I could see the bottom of it. And sure enough, there was a a dark spot there, which turned out to be, I guess, a blood blister. But I don't know how I got a blood blister. Like it was pinched. But I took my pocket knife and poked a hole in it and squeezed some blood out of it. And that helped a little, but it was still sore. And the next day it was real sore. So that night I come in and got an insulin syringe and pumped it full of colloidal silver. And if I haven't told you before, that burns like hell, but only for about 2 seconds. And it was a little sore that night, and the next day it almost completely gone. I'm still at a loss as to what it was, but I can tell you that whatever it was, when I shot silver in there, it got rid of it right away. And this weekend, we found out there's more people around Sholo that listen to the show than I thought. There's been some that's been listening for quite a while in the background there, and they don't come into the chat room at all. And I found some of them I don't even know, I've never even met. But I found out by looking through some of my acquaintances and stuff on Facebook that there are some that listen locally. And so for those of you that do, if you were planning on going to the preparedness fair at the LDS Stake Center in Sholo this weekend, on the 11th of May, and you were looking forward to some of the classes that were going to be taught inside the building, well, you can quit looking forward to that, because they have, for whatever reason, they've decided they were not going to do that anymore. So they're still doing the informational booths outside, but they're not doing the classes anymore. So I abandoned ship. I canceled my appearance there, and which worked out well, because the LDS church over in Snowflake, Taylor, is doing the same thing on the same day. They wanted me to come to theirs, and I said, sure, when it was going to happen a week after this one, I said, yeah, I'll be there, I'll come do it. And then they changed theirs to the same day, and I said, well, I can't, because I'm already committed to go to the one in Sholo. So I pulled the plug on the one in Sholo, and I called the guy in Snowflake, and he said, oh, yeah, you betcha. Whatever you want to do, we'll take whatever we can get. So I'll be doing 3 45-minute classes over in Snowflake on the 11th, starting at, I think, 11 o'clock, 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And I'll be doing one on EDC, one of your everyday carry stuff for you and for your vehicle. What do you carry in your vehicle all the time? And the second one will be your longer term bags, your bug out bag, your get out of Dodge bag. And the third one will be on colloidal silver. So if you have any interest in any of those things and you want to join us over in Taylor, let me look here. I can find out most Ricky Tick what the time is. It is, stand by, and I'm looking, 1 to 3, 1 in the afternoon till 3 in the afternoon. So I'm going to suggest to them that next year we work on making this like 4 to 6 hours, where you can actually spend a little more time. You know, people can get involved in more of this stuff, and you know what I mean? All right, stand by there. Okay, looks like I got some screwy stuff going on with this computer. It drives me crazy. I think it's getting tired. I've put it through the paces here in the last 2 or 3 years. All right, well, I've had all the fun I can stand, so I'm going to get on out of here, and we'll see you guys. This is Wednesday. I don't know what's going on this coming Friday, but there will be a Liberty Lounge of some kind on for you at the proper time. And Amy will be back on Monday at 7 Pacific. And I'll follow right in behind her with the Shooting Bench. And we'll see you then. Thanks for joining me.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.